Chapter 8. Home to the couple was the lavish, five-story townhouse located on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, featured on CBS's Person to Person. It featured an Otis elevator and front and rear staircases. There was a reception area on the ground floor next to a large powder room and a small mail room. The bottom flight of the main stairwell was nearby. Gazing straight up permitted the view of a rooftop skylight where one could gaze at the stars on a clear night. The Christmas season called for decorations galore. Giant snowballs, giant snowflakes, and colorful ornaments hung from the top over the staircase. The children truly enjoyed a winter wonderland inside their home. Kilgallen's parties were legendary, since the couple was truly society's darlings. Entertainer Steve Allen said, "Everybody who was anybody was at Dorothy's parties." Guests included George Harrison of Beatles fame. A fancy Christmas tree trimming extravaganza and New Year's Eve's costume ball were part of the winter season fun. Separate rooms became decorated nightclubs. When guests dressed as movie stars and other celebrities entered these rooms, they gasped. Judy Garland, the Count Basie Orchestra, and other friends of the Colmars performed. One year, Dorothy dressed as Scarlett O'Hara and Richard as Rhett Butler. At these parties, Kilgallen was the champion at word games and charades. She always played to win. Meanwhile, Kilgallen's love affair blossomed with sandy-haired singer Johnny Ray, 14 years her junior. Fellow columnist Liz Smith called the affair peculiar, while adding, "Here was this white-gloved Catholic making out with a homosexual all over town." Most times, the love affair took place at Ray's apartment. At one point, Kilgallen's bookkeeper was astonished to keep receiving invoices from a company called Carey Cadillac for more than $500. It turned out that the car service charged for waiting at Ray's apartment while Kilgallen visited her true love. Friends and other onlookers had watched with astonishment when Ray took off Kilgallen's shoe and kissed her foot during a romantic evening at the El Morocco. In her Voice of Broadway column, Kilgallen favorably praised An Affair to Remember, the film she and Ray had watched together. She wrote that the movie was a tribute to those who are getting tired of pictures about dope addicts, alcoholics, unattractive butchers, and men who sleep in their underwear. In contrast to the hard-edged persona Kilgallen was infamous for, Johnny Ray told his manager, "She was probably the most feminine woman I've ever known. And I always thought she was a pretty lady. The softest thing you ever touched. All those people that made fun of her. That was just plain sick." Close friend Hank Wessinger said of the couple, "Kilgallen and Ray were like two little kids. They would go romping off and do their little silly things. Together they were like two children. They were in love." Actress Carol Bruce happened to run into Kilgallen one night when Ray suddenly appeared. "Man, she had come to life," Bruce said, "with a crash and a bang. All of a sudden, she was looking glamorous and alive. She really seemed more beautiful then. I felt like she was like the princess in the story being awakened with a kiss." Dorothy Kilgallen had discovered love in the strangest of places. But love was not an emotion she exhibited when it came to Frank Sinatra. In fact, her attacks became as personal as his had been, as evidenced by this Voice of Broadway column. She wrote, "Success hasn't changed Frank Sinatra. When he was unappreciated and obscure, he was hot-tempered, egotistical, extravagant, and moody. Now that he is rich and famous, with the world on a string and sapphires in his cufflinks, he is still hot-tempered, egotistical, extravagant, and moody." In return, Sinatra told his nightclub audiences, "Kilgallen looks like a chipmunk. He also displayed anger whenever someone mentioned her name. especially the power she enjoyed from her perch as the gossip columnist with an audience of millions. Johnny Ray's official biographer, Johnny Whiteside, observed, "Rules must be followed. That was how they played it in Gotham. But Dorothy Kilgallen was in a position to change the rules any time it suited her. Everyone from the mayor on down to mobster Frank Costello, who occasionally joined her table at P.J. Clark's, knew it." Besides being a regular on the Broadway scene and appearing on What's My Line, Kilgallen, despite Sinatra's bad-mouthing her, was a coveted guest on various television shows. During the popular Milton Berle show, she had loads of fun in a silly skit with the wacky Berle and actor Mickey Rooney, permitting her to display a dry humor rarely seen. This said, Berle had the line to remember, telling Kilgallen at one point, "Dorothy, would you please stop What's My Lining me?" During 1958, 7 years until her death, Kilgallen diverted away from media chores to host with Johnny Ray what she and friends called the 63rd Street Parties. These happened at Ray's new address, located at the corner of 3rd Avenue and 63rd Street. Ever helping her young lover improve his image, Kilgallen chose the wall paintings in the 2,000-square-foot apartment. She also gifted Ray a candle-burning crystal chandelier. That Kilgallen paraded her romantic relationship with Ray out in the open air may have been risky for others in the entertainment industry, but there is no evidence she was condemned for the illicit affair in any newspaper or magazine articles. To the contrary, Kilgallen was given a pass, as if she had a right to seek companionship outside her marriage. Perhaps there were whispers of discontent behind her back, but those she knew as close friends simply accepted the romance with the popular singer, whose attractiveness was discussed in a Variety article. One critic said the popular singer was daringly handsome like a Colorado cowboy, while another wrote, "Ray is a country hick who needs a haircut." For instance, visitors besides Kilgallen to Ray's apartment included Lucille Ball, Sophie Tucker, and Yul Brynner. On Sunday evening, everyone watched What's My Line. Then, Kilgallen took a limousine and joined her friends. Johnny Ray's biographer, Johnny Whiteside, quoted one party guest regarding Ray and Kilgallen's saucy romance. "It was just part of the routine that Kilgallen drug him out of the living room into the den, in which there happened to be a long leather couch. We would sit in the living room and listen to all the activity that was going on in the den. It was lust out of control. You could hear it. We used to go over to the keyhole and look into the room. It became a joke to us." Into the wee hours, Kilgallen captivated those present with fascinating stories about various celebrities, many depicting Joe Sr., Jack, and Bobby Kennedy's extramarital affairs. When asked why she didn't include these dalliances in her column, Kilgallen was evasive, but finally stated she felt it was inappropriate to do so. In early 1959, just 4 years until she had her fateful interviews with Jack Ruby, and 6 years before she died, Kilgallen entered the world of international politics, once again displaying her refusal to back away from controversial issues. Despite the danger, she flew to Miami and interviewed Cuban exiles, many of whom were armed. Her friend, talk show host Larry King, at one point told this author that Kilgallen was gutsy, and her jumping into the highly explosive Cuban situation was a perfect example. Undaunted, Kilgallen wrote exclusively about the exiles' hatred for the Cuban dictator despite the risk of harm. In July of that same year, Kilgallen stunned millions of readers with what she called a Kilgallen exclusive, based on inside information from a confidential source, a mole, becoming the first reporter to allege that the CIA and organized crime were teaming up to eliminate Cuba's Fidel Castro. She wrote in part, "U.S. intelligence is virtually non-existent if the government isn't aware that Russia already has bases in Cuba, and Russian pilots in uniform are strutting openly in Havana. Fidel Castro is the target for so many assassinations, they're apt to fall over each other in their efforts to get him. The mafia want to knock him off. So do the Batista sympathizers, of course. And then there are his own disillusioned rebels, just for starters. He has machine guns and other ammunition mounted on every key rooftop near his base of operations. But the smart money doubts if any amount of precaution can change his status as a clay pigeon. True to her credo of protecting sources, Kilgallen never told anyone who the mole had been, insisting it was a secret never to be told. Regardless, as time passed, Kilgallen's enemy list was expanding. Besides Frank Sinatra, it now included four dangerous foes: the State Department, the CIA, those in the underworld who were cooperating with the government to kill Castro, and the FBI. Instead of working from the Journal American offices during this period of time, Kilgallen used what she called her office workspace on the fifth floor of her townhouse. For an unknown reason, she told friends it was the cloop, the sound a cork makes when opening a champagne bottle. The room, described as warm and airless, featured chartreuse carpeting, embroidered Swiss curtains with tiebacks of taffeta ribbons with bows, floral wallpaper, and a bed. Kilgallen was known to be a deep sleeper, with one friend suggesting that to awaken her, it was necessary to jerk the mattress up and down. Kilgallen originally moved her office from the newspaper surroundings to home during World War II. Subways depressed her, and she felt the $4 cab fare to speed to her work was too much extravagance. Five phone lines were installed, three for her, one for Richard, and one for her mother. No one at the time could enter the cloop, not even family members, including youngest son Carrie. At the time, only one person knew the phone number to reach her: Johnny Ray. Flashing a characteristic many readers found offensive, Kilgallen's poison pen appeared when, during a visit to the United States by Russian leader Nikita Khrushchev and his wife Nina, she wrote in a Journal American story bearing the headline, "Our Miss K says Mrs. K's clothes fit like a slipcover." Reader comments included one feeling revolted and another ashamed of Kilgallen's comments making fun of Nina's wardrobe, which Kilgallen said reminded her of those worn by chambermaids. Apparently embarrassed later with what she had written about Mrs. Khrushchev, Kilgallen told her colleague Louis Sobel, "Sometimes you sit at a typewriter and the words come out sharper and maybe a bit more unfair than you would want them to if you took more time and thought it over." Such conduct triggered a later comment from an unidentified journalist. From the late 50s until her death, Kilgallen grew more notorious than she had ever been popular. Being notorious meant she was a target for anyone with a grudge to bear, foreshadowing trouble ahead when she investigated the JFK assassination.